WBOI Presents In Session is a new series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us an opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. During this episode, we'll hear from Chad Chenoweth from Bishop Dwenger High School on the topic of etymology. Thank you for listening. Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. We're going to open this episode with a question, but in this case, I'm not the one asking it.
What do the following words have in common? Taxicab, tragedy, chevron, and capricious.
Outside of an episode of Sherlock, I can't think of any connections between those words, but then again, that's why you're here.
Yes, it is.
Joining me in the WBOI studio today is Chad Chenoweth. Now, full disclosure, Chad, you and I go back a ways. We've both been involved with speech teams. You teach Latin and coach the speech team at Bishop Dwenger in Fort Wayne. I am a Dwenger alumnus. You also teach another class at Dwenger on etymology. And for those who don't know, what is etymology all about?
Etymology is the study of word origins. Now, for instance, the etymology of the word itself, etymology, is the study of truth. It breaks down into two separate parts. Etym is Greek for truth, and ology can be traced back to logos, which means word, or as it enters English, study. Now, honestly, my fascination with words goes all the way back to preschool. My first foray into word origins is still vivid even 30 years later. 5-year-old me was wondering why the word illegal meant what it meant. At 5 years old, I thought I'd cracked the case. Illegal things were bad for America. Now, Ben, what's our national bird?
Okay, I think I see where you're going with this. It's the eagle.
Exactly. Now, I thought the word was ill, eagle, because illegal things made America sick. Now, as an adult, I can tell you the word illegal is Latin in origin, and it breaks down to not and law, stemming from the Latin word lex legis, which of course means law. But as a child, that was my first time realizing that words could be intriguing. In high school, I continued to pursue this with my Latin studies, and nearly a decade later, I graduated with a classics degree from Valparaiso University. Most of what I teach now revolves around Greek or Roman antiquity.
And etymology is like a combination of history, social studies, foreign languages, roots of words, and how they found their way into English, which is frustrating for me right now because I took your etymology class, and I know there's got to be some kind of root connection between taxicab, tragedy, chevron, and capricious, and I cannot for the life of me remember what it is.
I have to tell you, it's goats.
Goats.
Yes, and it's an odd coincidence across many languages that goats seemingly come into English in a variety of ways. Tragedy is a relatively well-known one among thespians. The explanation's unclear, but it means goat song from Greek, and chevron, that inverted V shape we find on letter jackets and uniforms, it's actually the combination of two rafters. The etymology travels through French and eventually Latin, and meant little goats, because the rafters would shelter a goat.
Okay, how about taxicab and capricious?
Capricious itself means whimsical or erratic. Now, while some scholars believe this to trace back to the word for hedgehog, most will argue it finds its roots in the Latin word for wild goats.
And taxicab?
Pretty simple, actually. Most forms of cab, when you find them, are actually a shortened version of cabriolet. Cabriolet is essentially a small cart. It was named as such because it wobbles when it moves, just like a goat.
Wow. Okay.
You know, in a pinch, I could give you at least a dozen etymologies all from the word goat.
Welcome to WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructor is Chad Chenoweth. This episode is Etymology, Lesson 1. Now, I'm going to hold you to that last statement. You've given us 4 so far. Can you give me the rest of the goat etymologies you can think of, just rapid fire?
I'll do my best. Butcher comes to mind. That's always a good one. Caprice, capra, capers, capri pants. You can see the theme through there. Capric acid, hercine, tragus, capricorn. That should be your solid dozen right there.
How long have you been teaching etymology class, and what are some of your favorite words to teach?
I proposed the class in the spring of 2010, and by that fall I was teaching it. I taught it for about 5 years until my Latin classes prevented me from having room in my schedule. I teach the online version of etymology now, and so far it's been one of my personal favorite experiences in my teaching career. I've always had an affinity for words that reveal more about the history and the people that are using those words.
What are some of the etymologies that carry major historical significance?
One of the first steps in the course is doing etiological archaeology. That is to say, I want the students to recognize what a word tells us about a certain era of history. Consider a word as simple as okay, one we use constantly. Whole books have been written just about its storied past. Okay started off as a facetious misspelling of all correct. That is, spelling all with the letter O and correct by starting it with the letter K. The abbreviation was then OK as a means of conveying all correct. Martin Van Buren was running for re-election in 1840. Now, his nickname was Old Kinderhook based on his birthplace. Supporters of his were called OK Clubs, both playing off his abbreviated nickname and the newfangled Americanism. Van Buren lost his election.
Thanks to Tippecanoe and Tyler too.
But the word survived him. Thus, the word okay was born out of a sarcastic youth and a failed presidential election.
That's a lot of history for one word. Can we go back any further?
Certainly. If we go back about 500 years, take, for instance, the game of pool. Whether we're discussing billiards or a pool of money and betting, the etymology reveals a darker side of the Middle Ages that preceded it. If you have a background in any of the Romance languages, you can probably hear the similarity between pool and various translations for chicken. In the Middle Ages, there was a supposed game called Jeu de la Poule. In such games, villagers would take turns throwing rocks at a chicken. Whoever hit the chicken was declared the winner. At the very least, we see how chickens had value hundreds of years ago. And when the word pool entered English in the late 1600s, its foul origins are clearly understandable.
Anything for more recent history?
Sure. Now, I'm kind of embarrassed about this one, but I do teach this in my course, the word bong.
That seems odd for a starter, but I'm sure the classes love it.
We don't linger on the definition. Instead, I have the students focus on the date and language of origin.
Which are?
Bong entered U.S. slang in the 1960s, and it's Thai in origin. How can we explain that crossover?
Considering the time and place, I'm going to guess the Vietnam War.
Precisely. The class forces students to draw connections, to realize not just the what behind the words, but the why as well. I find the most interesting cases are eponyms.
Now, for those listening, can you clarify what an eponym is?
I'll do it doing etymology, of course. Epo is Greek for after. Onym is Greek for name. It's a word named after a person. In our class, we learn how some words were actually just people's names until history intervened.
Can you name off a few?
We'll start with boycott, named after Charles Boycott. Mesmerize was named after the Austrian physician F.A. Mesmer. Shrapnel, after the British soldier and inventor Henry Shrapnel. Silhouette was named after the French finance minister, and really there are hundreds more.
Are there some standouts you could discuss?
Again, going with the probably more risque words, syphilis provides a curious story.
I feel really sorry for the person who inspired that word. Congratulations, your legacy is an STD.
To be fair, it was actually named after a character out of a Latin poem. In 1530, Giovanni Fracascaro, an Italian physician, wrote a poem. In his work, the title character, a shepherd named Syphilis, is presented as being the first victim of the STI. Another probably better received eponym would be Arby's. Now, most people look at Arby's and think maybe it's just named after a person with that name, but in fact, it's also an abbreviation. Arby's is actually the letters R and B turned into a single word. Now, the obvious guess here would think R for roast and B for beef, but in all honesty, the original people who founded the restaurant were the Raffle Brothers, thus R.B. Raffle Brothers, and that's the eponymous definition. Well, one last one I'd like to do is Adidas. Adidas actually comes from a German cobbler, which makes sense as Adidas started off as a shoe brand. The gentleman's name was Addy Dassler. When you take part of the first and last names combined, Adidas. and thus the shoe brand was born.
What have been some of your students' favorite etymologies over the years?
It varies from class to class. Many have enjoyed learning sports etymologies, which are much richer than you might realize.
Other than Adidas, can you give us some examples?
I don't want to gross any of our listeners out, but muscle always seems to get a response from my students. When you think of a muscle, it seems to ripple just under the surface when they're put into action. And that's why we can trace its etymology back to the Latin word musculum, which is Latin for little mouse.
Really? That's awful.
You can just picture the small mouse under the skin wriggling around as a muscle might. It always gets a reaction, and we'll continue with sports, some less disturbing ones. Let's talk about first string. I want to dispel some of the folk etymologies that are out there. Now, when I say folk etymology, it's when someone seems certain they know where a word comes from, when they really don't. Most people assume that first string has its genesis in music words, but it's actually martial in origin. Archers in ancient times would bring extra strings with their bows. So when one string broke, they could go to their second string and continue fighting.
I'm sure there's a Philadelphia Eagles reference we could put in there somewhere, but let's move on.
Well, speaking of the Eagles, that brings me to mascot. Now, that word is French in origin, and it means sorcerer's amulet, and it can be traced back to the French word, which means witch. All the words dealing with luck and sorcery, it enters English because of a 19th century French opera called La Mascotte, which essentially means the lucky charm. It was popular enough to play in London and then cross the pond all the way into Boston. The crux of the plot is that a poor farmer will continue to have good luck and prosperity, so long as a young woman whom he knows remains a virgin. When that virgin falls in love, chaos ensues. Now, it's a pretty good story, but clearly the word itself has long outlasted the original opera.
Many of the etymologies we've gone through so far have been Latin or Greek in origin, which makes sense. That's your specialty. Could you give us some examples outside of the classical world?
Of course, and that's something I try to do in the class as well. Our textbook focuses on the classical world, and we sometimes will take days simply to cover languages outside of that. Most languages in existence have some imprint, however minor, on English to one degree or another. Here are some examples I can throw out there. German gives us the word kindergarten, which means children's garden. Russian, for instance, I can name a few. Vodka means water. Sushi is Japanese in origin, for it is sour. Now, lesser known languages, Yiddish also affect us. One of my favorite etymologies at breakfast, the word bagel is Yiddish in origin for bracelet. Now I want to share an awkward one with you if you're up for it. This one goes back to Nahuatl, which is an Aztec language. Do you like avocados?
Not particularly, and this etymology is part of why.
I can imagine. Avocados can be found hanging in pairs on trees. The origin is actually testicles because of the similarities in look and appearance.
Yeah, I'm not a huge guacamole fan either, and I'm sorry if we just ruined guacamole for anyone else. Any other languages you want to hit?
Most of my students have always enjoyed my Arabic etymologies when we go through there. Arabic has been very generous to our language. Some words that have come in include alcohol. The word algebra also comes from the Arabic, but the definition is much different than you might realize. Algebra in the original language meant bone resetting. As it enters into English, we get the idea of resetting numbers within an equation. Lime is Arabic in origin, and even the word assassin.
And if I have this right, assassin was first introduced to English by William Shakespeare.
That's right. The Bard introduced nearly 20,000 new words to English. But there's another misconception that Shakespeare simply invented these words out of thin air. In many cases, it's his works that served as a vehicle for these new words to propagate. Assassin had existed long before, but it was a drug reference. Fanatical Muslim sects would take hashish, and then, in their drug-induced state, would murder opposing leaders. Shakespeare introduced this word in his work Macbeth as a person who murders prominent figures.
Its definition to this day. Another category we want to hit before we end our time here is one of my personal favorites, given I love tabletop games, board game etymologies.
Yeah, and that's one where my students really shine. They can actually pick out a lot of these, and the first word I'll bring up to you is a game I think everybody knows, Monopoly. Now, I mentioned folk etymologies before. I remember as a math student, I saw Monopoly and I thought, hey, I think I've broken this one down. Mono means
one.
And then as a math student, I saw poly and I thought, okay, many. And I saw one and then many. When in reality, monopoly is actually the rights of the seller. It's simply a word for selling property. Give me another board game.
One I know we've discussed in the past is Chinese checkers.
Chinese checkers is an interesting one. It originally goes back to the 1920s. Now, Chinese checkers, if you had to pick a country of origin, what would be the obvious choice?
You'd obviously go with China, but board games are really popular elsewhere in the world.
Of course they are, and if both of us being avid board game players, we know that the best country for board games is...
Germany.
And that's the origin of Chinese checkers. Originally, it was a game called Stern Halma, which meant star game. As it entered into America, there was a fascination with Oriental mysticism and the Far East, and that's how it got its original name, Hop Ching Checkers. Over time, people began to think of that term as offensive, and although Chinese checkers is not ideal, it's the name we're left with today.
What are some other board game etymologies you'd care to share with us?
Another one that comes to mind for me is Boulder Dash. Now, Boulder Dash is also an interjection, which means nonsense, or I could say much worse, but Boulder Dash was originally a mixture of beer and milk. I can't imagine drinking that on a warm day. And then finally, I'll talk about my favorite board game of all time, Clue. Now, I found it's not as popular as Monopoly, but it's still one of my favorites. The famous 1949 board game actually can be traced back to Greek myth. If you recall the story of the Minotaur and Theseus in the Labyrinth, he had a clue to help him escape, because clue originally, C-L-E-W, meant a piece of string. And now we look at clues today as something that helps you solve a difficult problem. Just as Theseus would use the string to escape the labyrinth, detectives use clues to solve mysteries.
You spoke of some alternatives to Balderdash. The best way I can think to describe this section is the seven words you can't say on public radio. We're probably not going to get to all seven, but what are a couple we could hit on?
In my classes, I have to teach about something called doublets. Now, a doublet would be two English words that can be traced back to the same root word, but took very different paths to come into English. Now, two words I'll share with you. We'll start with the word science. Science can be traced back to the Proto-Indo-European word, which means to split. When it enters into English, it had to go through Latin. So the word split became sciri in Latin, which eventually became the word science, because science is split off into different branches of knowledge. But when that word entered into German, the word for split became scheisse. Now, when the word scheisse enters into English, it becomes an expletive, which essentially means to defecate. In closing, since we're on these illicit words, I think every year, every class has to ask me where a certain word comes from.
The F-bomb.
Of course. Now, I never say that word in class, but kids are curious enough, and I want to dispel any folk etymologies. Because it's not like they ask me hoping for an answer, they often bring their own answers to me. Now, I've heard everything from Latin poems in the 1500s to that word actually being an abbreviation. I've heard it means for unlawful carnal knowledge, fornication under a Christian king, but the reality is not that exciting. It's Dutch in origin, from foken, meaning to breed cattle. So I love that we started with goats and we end with cattle.
Any closing comments before we end our time here?
Just that etymology is a really interesting concept that is attainable for just about anyone. Dictionaries often have stories behind them. Dictionary.com at the bottom has many stories and descriptions of where the words come from. Anyone can find this information, even if they're not taking an etymology class.
Chad, thank you so much for being a part of the inaugural run of our WBOI Presents In Session series. If you ever want to give our listeners another etymology lesson, let me know.
It'd be my pleasure. Thank you, Ben.
And thank you for listening to WBOI Presents In Session. You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our sound effects are by John Dawkins. Thank you for listening.